Wednesday, June 18th. This is Studio 2. I'm Cherry Gregg. Hello.
Hello. Was that to me or to them?
To you and to them.
Oh, nice. I'm Avi Wolfman Arendt. Today we're talking about religion in America. For a long time, the number of people who told pollsters that they were religious, attended church regularly or services regularly, was going down. In other words, America was becoming less religious. Mm-hmm. But recently, something started to happen in the data, Cherry, something unusual. First of all, the number of people saying that they're not religiously affiliated started to plateau. Mm-hmm. So the decline stopped.
Yep.
But then when you dove a little deeper into the numbers, you found that young men were showing signs of becoming more religious. And young women were leaving organized religion in droves. That opens up a whole host of questions. Mm-hmm. And we're going to talk about it today with an expert and you. We want to know, why do you think young men are sticking with religion while young women are leaving it? And if you are a religious person, not a religious person, want to talk about your own journey with this, we'd love to hear from you as well. We're going to focus on younger people today, but people of all ages.
Welcome.
Your experience matters here. 888-477-9499 is the number to call. The email address is studio2@whyy.org. If you're on YouTube, drop a comment in the chat.
And I hope, I really hope, again, I say this every day, that people call in, because our listeners add so much to the conversation. And I mean, when you talk about religion and men being more religious, it has a lot of implications on politics, on church life, on marriage, society, procreation, so many things, that there is a ripple effect. So we'd love to hear your thoughts. Again, 888-477-9499. The email is studio2@whyy.org. And I just love hearing from our listeners. They really do add some color to the conversation.
Ditto. I can't say it any better than that. I don't know. I can't add to that. I can ask you, though, to start us off with our first story in our trio of local news stories today. Cherry, go ahead.
Yeah, well, some possible good news for SEPTA. The Pennsylvania House passed a bill that would provide funding for public transit across the Commonwealth. The bill, which is now headed to the GOP-controlled Senate, would reallocate the amount of sales tax dedicated to public transit. Right now, about 4.5% of sales tax goes to public transit. It'll raise it to around 6%. And then in 2028, it could go up to 8%, driving about $1.5 billion to public transit over the next 5 years. To be clear, this legislation would not raise sales tax, so we wouldn't necessarily pay more. What it would do is reallocate the money that the state gets.
Recut the pie.
Yeah, recut the pie. And Democrats, who have the majority in the House, they passed Governor Shapiro's proposal 107-96, with several Republicans joining in to pass this legislation. Now, we've been talking about this on the show. SEPTA has a $200 million plus funding deficit and had put out this doomsday proposal that would cut, service. It would also hike fares. And so there was that. But also, according to the Philadelphia Inquirer that did a story today, a number of other transit agencies throughout the Commonwealth are also facing funding deficits. So the Democrats are trying to sell this as a bill that would help all transit agencies across the state, like Pittsburgh. They have a $100 million deficit coming up next year, and there are other ones in small towns. So they're trying to counter some of the GOP arguments against transit funding, Avi.
And as you alluded to, the big hurdle is the Senate. That's where Republicans have control. But you noted some Republicans did vote for this package in the House. Does that augur well for its chances in the Senate? Hey, who's to say? It's really hard to handicap that sort of stuff. But this is a very hot negotiation right now, very active. Everyone's watching. I'll also point out, SEPTA put out some ridership numbers today, as they do every month. May ridership numbers versus May 2024 overall up.
Yeah.
So even though it's not gotten back to pre-pandemic levels, numbers are still trickling up on SEPTA. And so I think that's another thing that they can bring to the legislature and say, look, we are recovering. We are improving. We're headed in the right direction. Do not cut us off at this really critical juncture and send us into that so-called death spiral.
Yeah. And by the way, the deadline for the budget, June 30th. So this will probably be in the headlines over the next few weeks. We'll see if they make the deadline.
Yeah. And they often don't make the deadline, by the way. Spoiler alert. Sometimes this drags into July.
Mm-hmm.
It is summer break for schools,
yep.
But not a summer break for union negotiators for the Philadelphia Federation of Teachers. Just as the city's blue-collar workers union is threatening its own walkout, we learned yesterday that the main teachers union for the School District of Philadelphia has authorized its own strike. Again, this does not mean a strike will happen, mm-hmm. but yesterday, members of the Philadelphia Federation of Teachers gave leaders the green light to strike if the union can't reach a deal with the school district. The current contract expires at the end of August, so there's a little bit of runway mm-hmm. here. The union is asking for parental leave, changes to sick day policy, among other changes. The district has some big money woes of its own. They're already using $300 million from reserves to avoid staff cuts this school year, and there is a big deficit looming. So the question of, you know, how much could they give in whatever contract comes next is a very live question right now.
Yeah, I mean, everybody wants more money, it seems like. But I'll say this. I mean, we talked about teacher shortages on the show, right, that have hit Pennsylvania, especially Philly. And I know teachers, they're burned out. They, you know, and the district has said, look, we need more money for our teachers. We need to be able to keep the ones that are here and attract new talent as well. And so their hands are out. And I mean, and I don't know about you, Avi, you covered education for years.
Yeah.
It seemed like Philly was starting to get some positive momentum, right? The state case that reallocated state funding for schools was a big win. You saw money going towards infrastructure to fix these old school buildings. We just talked about how there's new water filters on time, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you want to kind of keep that momentum. Nobody wants to see teachers go on strike this fall at all.
And frankly, it's been a long time since we've been in a place like this in Philadelphia. A little bit of history
here.
Starting around 2000 until 2018, I believe, the school district was run by a state-controlled mm-hmm. board. And under those rules, teachers were not allowed to strike, specifically in Philadelphia. There was not labor peace, but they could not translate that into a strike because there was a law against it. Or there were rules against it. Over the last five-ish years, local control has been reestablished. And since that time, there really hasn't been any labor strife. This could be the first flashpoint since local control was reestablished here in Philadelphia. So it's a big test. We really haven't had a situation like this in over 20 years. So really no one knows how it's going to unfold.
Yeah, we'll be paying attention to it. So much to pay attention to. And we have our third story.
Yeah, this one I don't think you have to pay attention to.
Well, you know, Avi has been our Reddit plug for a long time. And
not proud of that, by the way.
Yeah, that's a but I mean, you know, you tell us all the Reddit stories. So apparently a user on Philly Reddit discovered a cute, trendy vintage clothing and furniture store in Salt Lake City, Utah. It's called Strawberry Mansion. And on the in the headline, it says LOLLL, right?
Yes.
Of course, you know, if you're from Philly, there is a neighborhood in Philly called Strawberry Mansion. So it's very cute. By the way, the store has is pink in color. Love it.
Very twee.
So, yeah, very, very cool and cute. And so that, of course, got us thinking, what neighborhoods in Philly and towns in our region could double as store names? And what would they sell? We have that question.
All right. I got a bunch here, Cherry.
Of course you do. Love puns.
Just buckle up here. Buckle up.
Go ahead.
How about a winter wear store called Coatesville?
I love it.
A walking shoe company called Ambler.
Love it.
A florist called Flowertown.
Ooh.
Shout out to Debbie Builder on that one. All right. These are going to get progressively more unhinged, by the way.
Okay.
A shipbuilding company called Newark.
Ooh, like Newark, Delaware.
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, you get married, you get your wedding dress from a shop called Bridesburg.
Mm-hmm.
After you get married, you want to go and buy a house and you need some tchotchkes for the house, you head to Holmesburg.
We do have homes.
They could be right next to each
other. And
it
won't even be the prison. Go ahead.
A very old school cleaning business called Broomall. All they use is brooms.
Oh, you pulling him out. Go ahead. He's pulling him out.
An underground video equipment store called Camden.
That's actually pretty good.
That's not
I
bad,
like
right?
it. Yeah.
You're really tolerating me here. Thank you for that. A museum of defunct social media sites called Vineland.
All right.
A very specialized orthopedist practice called Alni. All they work on is knees. And finally, a version of Airbnb where it's only old, terrible houses, and it's called Villa No Fun.
I like that switch. King of the puns, right here. Avi Wolfman Arendts.
I'm so sorry, folks. God, I apologize. And welcome back, everybody, to Studio 2. I'm Avi Wolfman Arendts.
And I'm Cherry Gregg. For a long time, the story of American religion was the story of decline. Declining interest, declining membership. But recently, something has shifted.
For instance, Pew data shows the share of American Christians has started to plateau. And there's other evidence that young men are becoming more drawn to religion.
At the same time, young women are leaving the church in droves. For generations, women played a far more active role in American religious life than men. The question is, could that flip? And if it does, what would that mean for society? We want to hear from you. Join the conversation today. The question is, why do you think young men are sticking with religion while young women and others are leaving it? You can call 888-477-9499. You can email studio2 at whyy.org. And if you're watching on YouTube, drop those comments in the chat.
Of course, we want to hear from you, but we also want to hear from our main guest today, Melissa Deckman. Melissa is the CEO of PRRI, the Public Religion Research Institute. She's also the author of The Politics of Generation Z, How the Youngest Voters Will Shape Our Democracy. Melissa, thanks for being with us on Studio 2.
Thank you guys for having me. I don't have any puns, but I do have some data to share. So,
well, you know, data second to puns. Puns first, data second. Speaking of data, Melissa, I would love for you to share with us maybe like a data point from PRRI that you think tells the big story of what's happening today in American religion. If you could like pick one.
Oh, gosh. No, I do think that we're seeing a plateauing of people disaffiliating from religion. And what's been notable is that over the past 2 decades, we've seen a stark rise in Americans shedding their religious labels. We've seen certainly a slowdown. Here at PRI, we have our Census of American Religion. And if you were to look at it across all the country, we find that about 28.2% of Americans roughly now identify as religiously unaffiliated. Last year was about 27.6. So really just a slight increase, but really more of a plateauing. At the same time, I think that we're seeing fewer Americans shedding the Christian label. But again, it's important to recognize that, you know, there's still, I think, somewhat of a longer term trend for people being more religiously unaffiliated, in part because we know that people often remain religious if their upbringing is religious, and more and more Americans don't have that religious upbringing any longer. Mm. But below that, you know, national kind of trend data, there's definitely some interesting things happening with Generation Z.
And so dig into that, peel back the layers, because we've been seeing these headlines sort of trickling up about a gender divide in this generation. Tell us about that.
Yeah, no, I really like the question you posed to your listeners. You essentially said, why are young men sticking with religion and why are young women leaving? And I think that's been the really interesting story. So in the past decade, you know, we've been tracking, religious affiliation here at PRI pretty regularly, the extent to which people go to church and pray and read their Bible or scripture. What we found is that American Gen Z women, at least, have become far more or less religious. Back in 2013, about 29% of Gen Z, or young women, 18 to 29, we didn't really have the category of Gen Z yet, really. But so back then in 2013, we found about 29% of young women identified as a religious nun. that really ballooned to 40% in our last census of American religion. So a really 11-point increase over time. At the same time, our data shows that young men have plateaued, essentially. There's been no change with respect to their religious affiliation. So we find that approximately the same number of young men, about 35 to 36% over the last decade, remain religiously unaffiliated. And so that, to me, is a very interesting religion story. One, because American women historically have always been more religious. Mm-hmm. And if you look at older generations, those women do tend to be more religious than men. But the reverse is happening when it comes to Gen Z. And that's kind of an interesting trend.
Mm. Wow. We were talking about puns earlier. Just to clarify, when you say religious nun in this context, it's N-O-N-E, folks, not N-U-N.
Yes.
So
Exactly.
I want to bring in a caller now. This is Sarah from Robbinsville who wants to join the conversation. Hey, Sarah, you're on Studio 2. What is your question or comment or perspective here?
My comment and perspective is just I'm on the younger side, not 29, I'm 39. But I've been raised in the church with my siblings, and it's just interesting how you can be raised by the same parent and all split off and do different things. I'm raising my daughter in the church. She goes to church every Sunday. She's in the choir. She goes to Sunday school. She was baptized. While I have a sibling that, you know, doesn't go to church at all, doesn't really believe in any of that stuff. And then a sibling who here and there goes to church. So it's just very interesting.
The full range in one family.
And quick question, Sarah. Right. Quick question, Sarah. Is male siblings, female siblings? Tell me the gender makeup and
so
is there a difference there?
My oldest sister is completely out of the church. And then my brother goes with his fiance here and there, but not much.
Interesting. Thank you. That's Sarah from Robbinsville there. And so, Melissa, can we sort of get into why, some of the whys you're seeing this gender divide? So what is driving women out and what's keeping the guys around?
Yeah, sure. So I think in my book, The Politics of Gen Z, you know, it's a story largely about gender and how gender is fueling changes among Gen Z in terms of their political behavior. But it's also, I think, extended to their religious behavior. So with Generation Z women in particular, we have what I would call sometimes a more fiercely feminist generation. So gender consciousness really matters to young women. And a lot of young women have left the church because they feel as though they don't want to be part of denominations that don't ordain women, for example. Mm. You know, of course, the Catholic Church and many conservative evangelical churches do not allow for women to be ordained or to hold formal leadership positions in the churches. And so I think that's a factor that, in their own lived experience, they're out doing things, they're embarking on careers that have been traditionally male, they're playing sports, they're becoming, you know, leaders in their own right. And so to not have that ability in a more traditionally minded church, I think is probably a bit off-putting. I think also for young women, we find in our data at PRI that they tend to identify more as LGBTQ, much more than young men. And we have found in our own analysis of young people who left religion in America, 6 in 10 say that they leave because of the church's treatment of LGBTQ individuals or their beliefs about LGBTQ individuals.
Six in 10,
and so,
that's a very high mark.
6 in 10 young people have left for that reason. Other people reasons people leave is because of mental health, that the religion's been bad for their mental health. That's often a commonly cited reason there. Most people leave because they just stop believing. But generally speaking, though, I think for young women who tend to be more politically liberal, who care about LGBT rights disproportionately compared to older women and their male peers, you know, they've found the church to be sort of limiting in who they are. And so, and then finally, I'd add, you know, at least with some more conservative churches, certainly not all churches, there's a range of ideas and denominations out there when it comes to these things. But there has been, I think, in recent years, amplified by the manosphere, this idea of a doubling down on more traditional gender roles in churches. Mm-hmm. And so for young women, that's something that's not appealing. Mm. Now, on the other side, that might help to explain why some men, young men are actually not leaving, right? And so some evidence suggests that the young men who are staying in churches today, at least in Christian churches, tend to actually have more conservative views on gender roles, right? And I think in a political atmosphere where you have, just look at last fall's election, right? This kind of doubling down on masculine themes. You know, there's a sense for at least some young men that they feel like they're not valued because of who they are as men. And so into that space, I think you have some conservative churches making appeals to younger men, and really kind of, again, talking about the importance of what in religious terms would be the male headship role, that men are protectors, and that, you know, you don't have to apologize for being a man. This is what we do here in this church. And so I think at least for some young men, that might be appealing and might be a clue as to why not disaffiliating, right?
Yeah. So maybe some sort of equal and opposite reaction phenomenon happening here. Although, as you point out, it's not really equal right now, we're seeing in terms of the data we're seeing, but something to watch. Let's bring in some more callers. Mm-hmm. We've got a lot of folks lined up here, and I want to get their voices in the conversation. Lauren from Havertown is on line two. And has, I think, a comment and answer to our question today. And by the way, if you didn't hear the question, why do you think young men are sticking with religion while young women and others seem to be leaving religious affiliation in America? So let's hear now from Lauren in Havertown.
Hello. I believe that young men stay or become religious because historically religion has controlled women. And women don't want to be controlled anymore. And I believe that is part of the reason that they leave religion.
That's an interesting perspective from Lauren. Can I ask a question off of that to you, Melissa Deckman? I think we have a lot of comments along those lines. And yet what's interesting is that historically, even though that was always, as Lauren says, at least in Lauren's perspective, that was always kind of like the case, right? That men had were at the top of the hierarchy in many formalized religious structures. And yet, a lot of the participants disproportionately were women. So how do we explain that? Like, why in the past did it seem like women had a more active role, given that in many faiths, men were at the top of the hierarchical pyramid?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, I think historically, if you take a longer lens, in the 20th century, in fact, you know, women, I think we're really doing most of the work of the church and keeping the church kind of, you know, really functioning in a lot of ways. So men were certainly leaders, but women were staffing the altar guilds or teaching Sunday school or doing the clothing and food drives, right? And I still think disproportionately evidence shows that it's happening still today. And I think for many women who, for example, were more traditional homemakers or didn't have sort of the careers in business that you now see, like many women, of course, do today, unlike, you know, back in the mid to late 20th century, church became sort of an acceptable outlet for them to use their resources and their skills and to organize. It was very socially acceptable, a place for them to maybe exhibit some of those leadership, you know, I think muted leadership, not preaching from the pulpit, but certainly really helping churches kind of to run on time and those sorts of things. And so I think that what, you know, now with younger women, I think there's a sense that, you know, that's an unequal kind of status, and they're just not wanting to be part of that any longer. It's kind of caught up. So I think, you know, there's cultural lag, certainly, and certainly, you know, and I think still today, you know, if you go to most church services, you see it's disproportionately older people and older women who are still the lifebloods of a lot of these churches. And so I think that's an interesting thing to keep an eye on. But certainly, I think younger women feel that maybe that's not as fulfilling for them. They can find meaning and purpose and activity organizing other capacities.
And by the way, we're going to bring in a perspective from a local church. But first, I want to bring in a caller. We have Marcy from Morrisville on the line. Marcy, you're on Studio 2. What's your question or comment or perspective on this issue?
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. I have three Gen Zs, a 29-year-old, 25, and 22. The two older are boys. They sought out churches specifically for a sense of community that they can't find in their generation. One chose evangelical, one chose Catholic, and the daughter, who's 22, is an atheist. The two boys are loving the sense of community and have really embraced the different religions. They were all raised Christian, but I let them do what they needed to do. But specifically, all I hear from the Gen Zers are there's no sense of community. There's nowhere to go to find people who are like us and who want to do what we do. So they've found that in their churches.
Wow.
And so just to drill down a little bit, Marcy, when you say your sons felt like they couldn't find community anywhere, is that a sense of like social isolation, being online too much? Like, what do you think was why couldn't they find community in other places? Have they ever like sort of told you that or expounded on it at all?
Yeah, we talked about it very openly. Yeah, it was, of course, during COVID when the social isolation was at its worst. But they've found that they're very interesting. They want to do different things, and they're not about going to bars and meeting people and drinking. So they wanted something different that was a lot more fulfilling. And I said, why don't you just go to a church and join a young adult group and, you know, see if you can find people that are like you? And they did, and that's what they've been doing. And I have to say, both are really enjoying it.
That's so interesting.
And quick follow-up about your daughter who has left the church. Any reason why? Was it what we were talking about here?
Yeah. Speaker, yeah, she was on point. She said, you know, I don't like how they treat women. Women are not really sort of brought up to any kind of leadership role, and I don't like the whole feeling. Yeah, it was everything she said that your speaker said. It was right on point.
Wow, Marcy, what a call. Marcy from Morrisville, just telling the whole story of the show in 90s.
With her kids. Her kids are the example.
Thank you so much, Marcy. And we want to talk about, you know, what people on the ground are feeling and seeing. Do they see more young men joining churches, as Marcy was talking about there? So with us now to discuss all of that is Brad Leach, the founder and lead pastor at City Life Church in South Philadelphia. Hey, Brad, thanks for being here on Studio 2.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So, Brad, tell us a little bit about your church and what you're seeing as far as like who's coming in with this Gen Z.
Yeah, so our church is 13 years old. We started it in high school in the Italian Market area of South Philly. We're in high school facilities primarily for many years until we moved into a permanent facility. But part of that story is that, you know, for 7 years of our church, we had no building outside of the school that we were renting on Sundays. And so we were really forced out of necessity to use homes and coffee shops and restaurants and parks in order to gather people during the week for community and for relationship, which is a huge part of what our church provides and what I think the church is created to be. And as a result, community and creating just simple onboards for people to enter into relationships with one another has been a big part of the story of our church. I really resonate with Marcy, this last caller, in terms of what we have seen in our church. It is people who I think have experienced a lot of the isolation. There's an epidemic of loneliness among young men right now who are looking for a male role model. You know, when you reverse engineer, I think a lot of the symptoms of what we're seeing the young men are experiencing today in our country, a lot of it goes back down to the loss of a male role model. And so in a church that has multi-generational diversity, that has multi-ethnic diversity like ours, a young man can come in, can find somebody who's 10, 20, 30, even 40 years older than they are, who can become a guide for them to move through the stages of a man's life. And we're seeing, just anecdotally in our church, we're seeing a rise among Gen Z coming into our church in both young men and young women.
Yeah.
But a lot of them, it's interesting, will attend one of our small groups before they'll even attend a service on Sunday.
And what does that tell you, Brad? And what does that tell you, the fact that that's the entree for a lot of younger people into like your congregation?
Yeah, I think, again, to what Marcy was just saying in regard to her own kids, there is a longing to belong. You know, where can a young man today say, I'm depressed, I'm lonely, I'm experiencing panic attacks? Where is the group where that guy can open up about those things that maybe would not fit into what our culture would say is masculinity?
Yeah.
And so providing a group where it's safe to open up about the real struggles that all of us are experiencing, I think is meeting a need that a lot of people have.
So how do you see this trend continuing? Do you see the church becoming this safe space for young men, sort of growing and growing?
I do. I hope so. That's what we're working toward. You know, to some of the conversation already as well, like I think, you know, the heart of Christianity and what I would say would be the real legacy of Jesus is that the rise of men and women is not a zero-sum game. And I think for a long time, our culture thought that for men to rise, women have to be pushed down. And now, you know, I think we need to be careful. We could have the opposite view that if women are going to rise, men have to be pushed down. You know, I celebrate the rise of women's rights. I think Christianity has been a big part of that historically, all the way back to the legacy of Jesus in terms of empowering women. In our church, women lead at every level. And so I think the goal is that men and women should be a team and rise together. And so that's our dream that, you know, we're really trying to see play out.
Thank you so much for that perspective. That's Brad Leach, founder and lead pastor of City Life Church in South Philly. Brad, really appreciate the time
today.
Thank
you. Yes. Want to read a couple comments?
Yeah, so we've got a lot of people here lined up, so I guess we should read some of these in. So here's a comment from Jim on YouTube. The bros are clinging to any semblance of superiority they can find. Trump bragged about taking care of the women. True religiosity fades as one ages.
Yeah.
E mentions it's all Putnam bowling alone. So that's a sociologist, Robert Putnam, talks about the idea that people are spending less time in groups, and obviously religion can fill that void for many people.
And I want to read this comment from Maura, who says, I grew up Irish Catholic and could never get into all the fire and brimstone. So I spent my teens and 20s trying all different religions, Judaism, you name it. Turns out having faith in myself is all the religion I need. So Maura is one of the young women who have left the church. Maybe we should bring in another caller. We have Ryan from Point Breeze on the line. Ryan, you're on Studio 2. What's your question or comment?
Hi, I'm a church organist. I live in Philadelphia, but my church is an ELCA Lutheran church in Kennett Square. And I just want to throw out that there's, like, we're seeing in our church and from the churches around us, this problem of young men and women leaving the church, but specifically the churches that are catered more towards evangelical style and or Catholic style. We see the young men going there too. But I wanted to mention that there are a lot of churches that are still fighting for LGBT rights, women's rights, and have women pastors, gay pastors, allow gay marriage. And I think that there's this idea from a lot of people that churches are this one lump sum entity.
Yeah, they flatten out the identity of church, and you're saying it's more diverse, really, than people give it credit for.
Yeah, and that I think if people start to understand that there are places in our Philadelphia area that cater to really loving people and showing love, then I think that would help grow the Gen Z and Millennial and Gen Alpha. But right now I feel that it's become so political, and religion and politics go hand in hand, that you're seeing this decline in people wanting to go.
Yeah. Interesting perspective from Ryan and Point Breeze. Mm-hmm. I want to reintroduce Melissa Deckman here, who's been with us the whole hour. Melissa's the CEO of the Public Religion Research Institute. We haven't really touched on, Melissa, what types of religious organizations, what sects are seeing growth and which are still seeing steep decline? Because we can look at the big picture and say, well, there's this overall plateau, but that doesn't mean everyone's feeling this or experiencing this equally. Can you take us inside the numbers a little bit there, Melissa?
Yeah, sure thing. You know, I think that I would say the trends I'm seeing when it comes to the more formal organized denominations, whether it's the ECLA that your caller just referenced in the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America, or even the Southern Baptist Convention, which is the largest conservative evangelical Protestant denomination, you see their memberships declining, right? And I think that that's part of a larger trend where many Americans are just growing skeptical of institutions more broadly, from the government to organized religion to the media. Sorry to tell you, to share that.
No, we know it. We've seen the numbers. No lies detected, Melissa.
But I do think there's some growth when it comes to mega churches and more non-denominational grassroots, the kind of authentic churches there, kind of Brad, the pastor from the other church, there does seem to be anecdotal evidence of some growth in those kinds of areas. I think that we've seen a decline of the number of white Christians in America over time, which is really notable. And part of that is a function of how diverse we're becoming racially and ethnically too, right? So I think it's kind of a mixture that is really happening. I do want to kind of circle back to a point that was raised from Brad and from some others, in that, you know, I do think that Americans are hungering for a sense of community. Mm-hmm. And I love that one of your folks who wrote in about Putnam and Bowling Alone, we're all into social capital here. I could talk all day long about social capital and why it's important, right, in society. But we find in our data at PRI that among Americans who attend church regularly, 80% say they do it because they want to experience a community of believers, right? So there's personal beliefs, right? But there's also a power in being with like-minded folks here. And I also would just echo the last caller. Just let me say this. There is a huge religious diversity in this country. I think a lot of people, when they think about religion, the loudest voices that are often televised as being religious might be conservative, I think, and evangelical. But in reality, you run the gamut from Unitarians to the Episcopal Church to Jewish Americans to others. And there's really no monolithic attitudes when it comes to things like LGBTQ equality or reproductive rights or the role of women as leaders and the role of queer folks in church leadership and being ordained. So I think that's a really important point to bear in mind, that people sometimes have this perception. I think, obviously, you pointed this kind of mono church idea.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And our data really increasingly always show that there's so much diversity when it comes to the religious landscape.
Yeah, and I want to read this comment from Carla, who says, I'm a 60-year-old Black woman who grew up in a predominantly white evangelical church. I stopped going to church as I see too much hypocrisy in members' political views and support of Trump MAGA. But I have three sons, ages 26, 25, and 21, and I find that they are more interested in reading their Bibles and seek community at church. They enjoy church, and I think they find emotional support.
Oh, fascinating.
And I wanted to sort of like expand on and go back to the idea of this gender gap. And if we do you think this is a blip on the screen, or do you think this is something, a trend that will actually continue, and then the impact it could possibly have on dating and marriage and birth rates, if you're talking about a gender divide with this young generation that's coming up?
Yeah, no, I think this is something we should really keep a closer watch of. I mean, we're seeing this larger gender divergence among Generation Z when it comes not just to religion, but also to politics, to culture. I think part of it is a result of really Americans being more isolated, spending more time on their phones, right? And the algorithms often kind of propel you. If you're young women who care about social justice, you're getting fed online sources that reinforce those views. And in some ways, you're finding community, but the downside of that is that you're not hearing alternative perspectives or hanging out with people that are different than you. And of course, we see the same thing obviously happening on the right when it comes to young men who are maybe listening to Joe Rogan or other people in the manosphere, and the algorithms feed them into like-minded communities. And we're seeing this really being a lot more pervasive among younger people today. And so it can be potentially, I think, quite destabilizing. You know, a lot of younger people are delaying marriage or not getting married at all. We've seen increasingly in our society that people will choose their political partners based on their political views. That was unheard of 20 to 30 years ago.
They even put it on the apps. They put it on the apps.
I know. Yeah. Exactly. And I think that can be potentially pretty destabilizing. We already have a lot of polarization in our politics in America. But what I worry about when it comes to younger people, if you have young women siloed as very, very liberal, and my book shows that they are very progressive, more so than even older women, but very different in their views and attitudes when it comes to young men. And I think the other factor too, we haven't really talked much about it, but there's like a class issue as well. Studies are showing that women are increasingly college educated, especially younger women, Men are bowing out of college at different rates. And so, you know, in some ways, marriage as an institution is somewhat healthy, especially if you have people that are college educated and they tend to stay longer in marriage compared to historical norms. But I think the other side is that younger people, because they have differing political views and educational values and all of these sorts of things and attitudes about gender equality, all these kinds of things together, it can have, I think, potentially a destabilizing effect in terms of future coupling and childbearing. But there's also an economic component. I think a lot of young people don't want to have kids because it's really expensive, yeah, you know, yeah. And younger people are struggling to get out of their parents' basement a lot of times, right?
Absolutely.
So that couples into all of this as well.
Sure. Yeah. Let me read in a couple more comments, and we do have some callers waiting. I would love to get to them as well as we get toward the end of the hour here. Yelena on YouTube says, my pastor is a lesbian. I follow a lot of female pastors on social media. They always point to the history of women in the church and in the Bible. Bros a fan says there are vibrant communities of young Jews, some of which are in Philly. It seems as if more women than men are involved. Many meet outside of traditional synagogue buildings. Let me bring in a caller now. This is Shai from West Philly on line four, who's been patiently waiting for a while. Thanks so much, Shai. Yes. What's your question or comment?
Yeah. Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I'm Sai, and I'm a student rabbi, and I wanted to share that at least anecdotally, there is such a vibrant and just rich growth of queer Jews and queer involvement in Judaism, queer adaptations to Judaism. And I mean, by queer, I mean not just like lesbian and gay, but I mean specifically like non-binary and gender non-conforming folks. It doesn't sound like that was necessarily shared in the statistics, so I've been curious about how non-binary Jews might fit into this religious decline or resurgence.
Yeah, interesting. Good question.
We can ask that. Thanks, Sai.
Yeah, you know, Melissa, any thoughts on that? How non-binary folks fit into, you know, whether it be Judaism, Christianity? How are they part of the folks leaving, coming back, staying? What are you seeing?
Yeah, and that's a great question. And Sai raises a really good point. You know, we do these nationally representative surveys. And even though our Census of American Religion, for example, has 40,000 Americans we survey, it's so hard to start to cut and divide into certain categories because American Jews, for example, are about 2% of the U.S. population. And then to dive deeper into non-binary Jews is going to be an even smaller part of the U.S. population. All of this is to say, we do have data on LGBTQ Americans in our Census of American Religion. And they do tend to, about half of LGBT Americans actually identify with a religious tradition. So that is interesting and probably kind of bucks some traditional stereotypes of queer people in America and their religiosity. But they do it at much lower rates than I think Americans overall. And there's evidence in our data that, probably not surprisingly, LGBT Americans have left church at higher numbers directly because of the treatment by many traditions, religious traditions, or treatment of LGBT individuals. Mm. But I think Sai is very, very, she raises a really important point. There are a lot of inclusive denominations and religious traditions, including many denominations within the Jewish tradition that really are more welcoming and inclusive. And I think that's, you know, an important point to keep in mind.
Maybe we can get this last caller in. We have Justin from West Philly who's been waiting on the line. Justin, you're on Studio 2 with your question or comment and noting that we're short on time. So keep it brief.
All right. Absolutely. Thanks very much. I grew up in the Southern Baptist Church and I left in college. And I tried other churches, house churches, nothing fit because it all kind of came back to religion. And I agree that like my brothers still go to the Southern Baptist Church. They're looking for some form of community social production function they don't get in society. So I'm wondering if you think that eventually, if men feel more included, people will leave the church again. Because ultimately, I stayed out because I just don't believe. And it always does come back to religion in some form. So I'm just curious.
That
what
boomerang back effect. Like if you're looking for community, but then ultimately you get down that path and you realize, hey, but I don't have sort of the dogmatic belief, you know, what happens? Any thoughts on that, Melissa?
Yeah, you know, as I alluded to earlier, we asked people why they end up leaving religion. And, you know, the number one factor for all Americans who've left, like we found in 2023, the last time we asked this, 67% said they just stopped believing in their church's teaching, right? Wow. And so I think that's an important point to consider. You know, churches are great for building social capital, for building community. But, you know, sometimes the content of the sermons or the contents of the theology might not be always welcoming to people, or maybe it doesn't kind of feed into their larger ideas and views about. Exactly. There's a lack of jibing there. And so I think that's a really important point to kind of bear in mind.
And I just wonder, and I know we only have a little bit more time, but I just wonder how, you know, pre-sex abuse, you know, the Me Too movement, church too, all these things sort of, you know, built into that, that feeling of I don't believe. Yeah.
I think that you're spot on here. We found about a third of Americans in 2023 left the church because of clergy sexual abuse scandals. And I think the sense that there's a lot of hypocrisy in the church it has turned a lot of people off over time.
Yeah. Well, that's Melissa Deckman. Boy, you packed a lot into that
you
1 hour,
did.
Melissa.
You did.
Bravo to you. Melissa Deckman is the CEO of the Public Religion Research Institute, PRRI, and the author of The Politics of Generation Z, How the Youngest Voters Will Shape Our Democracy. Melissa, thanks so much for your time today on Studio 2.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, and thanks to all the folks who called in and left comments. Robust conversation. Also, thank you to our producers, Debbie Bilzer, Paige Murray Bessler, and Andreas Copes. Thanks to Mike Schiffler, our visual producer, Al Banks, and Tina Calicay engineered today's show. Our executive producer is Kevin McCrory from Studio 2 here at WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Cherry Gregg.
And I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt. Thanks so much for joining us.